No Coach K this time, but hope you enjoyed that intro on Sunday's episode. Received a lot of feedback, and it was appreciated. I had a lot of fun making it. You obviously had a lot of fun listening to it. To those of you who have requested the individual file, there is a YouTube link provided by one Kyle Boone out there on the tweet machine. But real quick, by the way, if you are not already, you know, Parrish and I, in addition to the podcast three times a week, of course, we are on CBS Sports HQ talking college hoops daily at this point in the season. We're heading towards March, and you can watch on your phone, computer, tablet. If you have cut the cable cord and you watch on your smart TV via Roku, Apple TV, Fire Stick, any kind of device, CBS Sports app, CBS Sports HQ, we're on in the mornings, afternoons, nights after games. I'm in studios on the weekend, and our presence will continue to be even more. So if you enjoy the pod, just a heads up here, sport coverage across the board on CBS Sports HQ, but we're on there chatting hoops frequently, all teams, all kinds of conferences, bracket stuff, seed stuff, you name it, we're there. So be sure to check it out and enjoy today's episode.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, February 12th, 2020. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I want to start with the hottest power conference team in the country. And I'm not even sure if that's technically true, but I also don't care because Penn State is red hot and rolling. Beat Purdue Tuesday night, 88-76 inside Mackey Arena. So Penn State is on a seven-game winning streak. That's the longest Big Ten winning streak in school history. Nittany Lions are now 19-5 overall, 9-4 in the Big Ten, alone in second in the league standings. I had a Kentucky fan tweet me a few days ago. They tweet me all the time, but this one was just a few days ago. And he said, come on, Parrish, do you really think Penn State is better than Kentucky? Because I've had Penn State ranked ahead of Kentucky in the top 25 and one for a while. And my answer, if my ranking didn't suggest that, my answer is yes. I think Kentucky is good, but I think Penn State is better, and the computers do as well. Norlander, what does Pat Chambers have to do to get a lead item in the court report? You're not respecting this man enough.
Oh, is that right? Have you written anything about Pat Chambers other than maybe a little top 25 and one yet?
Well, I don't write anything other than the top 25 and one.
Exactly. If you want to help out and chip in on the court report and write a Pat Chambers item, I'd be more than happy to let you do that and co-byline that. You want to tag team that up for next week, GP?
We are lucky that I am still able to do this podcast three times a week with how little I sleep and how overwhelmed I am. I want to kill myself right now.
This is an amazing start to the podcast. Shouts to the court report. We'll get to some of that in just a minute here. Penn State is absolutely on fire. Did get a dedicated segment, and I made sure it got a dedicated segment on Tuesday night's CBS Sports HQ overnight there, because the Nittany Lions, which were the only team that I really had a gripe with not being in the top 16 in Saturday's reveal, now obviously firmly in that mix. 18th in the net, 19-5 overall, got to seven quad wins with the victory last night, 5-2 in quad two, and then a relatively low number of quad three and quad four games, just seven total in general. Just a refresher here on Penn State for those, because listen, you and I both know that because Penn State almost never makes the tournament, it's just not the kind of program that people, unless you're a Penn State fan or looking at the Big Ten, you're not in touch with them. But this is turning into a pretty cool story. Here are their rankings right now in KPI, and these are the metrics that the committee will look at. So right now, 15th in KPI, 8th in strength of record, which is a completely resume-based metric. It does not predict how good you are. It's just who you played and how you've done against that schedule. Number 8 for Penn State. 18 in the net, as I said. And then the predictives, BPI's got it at 14. KenPom, 11. And then Sagarin up to 9. Credit to Pat Chambers and Penn State for getting to this point and doing it despite, you know, Lamar Stevens has been good, but he has not been ridiculous. He's only shooting 28% from three-point range. He's not a natural three-point shooter. But there have been guys, you know, Myron Jones, been very, very solid. I've always loved the fact that Penn State has a dude named Miles Dredd on it, which sounds like some sort of video game. But I think he's been a really, really solid player at all. And, yes, for the past 4 weeks, Penn State, as hot as almost any power conference team in America, and really a top five team overall. If you, they've been streaking with wins 4 on the road and 7 in the Big Ten. They're now 9-4 in the league.
when we talked about them on Sunday's podcast, or more specifically, we talked about the bracket reveal, I told you that of the 16 teams the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee highlighted, 15 of them were in my top 25 and won on Saturday morning. The only one that wasn't was they had Michigan State and I had Penn State. And I thought that should have not been that way then, and even more so now, although Michigan State did get a nice win at Illinois on Tuesday night and bounced back into the top 25 and won on Wednesday morning. Keep in mind, I know that what happened Tuesday night at Purdue was on a surface level just a win over an unranked Purdue team, because most people, when they think of rankings, they think of the AP poll. But Purdue is like really good in the computers, top 20 at KenPom. And this is a Purdue team, by the way, that smashed Michigan State by a million, last month.
Right.
They had beaten Wisconsin in that building by 19, had beaten Iowa in that building by 36, I guess. And so to go into Purdue, inside Mackey Arena, and get a double-digit win is pretty remarkable. And it's the first time Penn State has won at Purdue since 2006, which means by extension, first time Pat Chambers has ever won at Purdue. And Purdue has now won four straight road games at Purdue, at Michigan State, at Nebraska. That's Pinnacle Bank.
There we go. Shouts to Mo. Nebraska's so flat that I don't care. Continue.
And then at Michigan. So if I tell you you're going to be able to go beat Michigan on the road, Michigan State on the road, Purdue on the road, and win, and then just throw in another one at Pinnacle Bank, forget about it. That's four straight Big Ten road wins for Penn State. Go ahead, Norlander. Trivia timing. Let me give you the question. When's the last time Penn State won four straight Big Ten road games?
I'll say 2005.
No, you were supposed to trivia time me. You were going to ask me that question.
Oh, well, you just presented the question. Hold on. Why am I asking you the question that you already know the answer to? Why don't you just ask, just trivia time me, and then that's my guess, 05. Is 05 correct?
No, it's not correct.
All right, so Paris, here's a trivia time.
Okay.
Trivia time. Okay.
Let's go.
When was the first edition of Trivial Pursuit put into me? No. Okay. Penn State. Uh-huh. When was the last time the Nittany Lions won four consecutive games in Big Ten play on the road?
Norlander, it's never happened before this time.
What?
That's a record. Four straight Big Ten road wins for the Penn State Nittany Lions.
Wow. Yeah, this is a hell of a season. How about this? According to Torvik, right now, here are the seed projections. All right, obviously, Baylor, Gonzaga, San Diego State, and Kansas on projection for one seeds. And then it's Duke, Seton Hall, Maryland, Michigan State, somehow, I don't know about that, as twos. Then Louisville, the best three, and Penn State, the second best three right now. That's the projected way things are expected to go. And barring some just bad losses, and here's why you got to be excited if you're a Penn State fan. And I'm actually using the phrase, here's why you got to be excited if you're a Penn State fan on a college basketball podcast. Because last night's game against Purdue, knowing the opponent, knowing Purdue's tendencies at home, that building, school history, all of that. If you're a Penn State fan that's being honest with yourself, you probably are like, I hope we can keep it competitive, but I kind of think we're going to lose by 7 to 10 points. That's not what happened. You won dominantly. You continued to win in such a strong fashion. So you should have adjusted expectations here. Yeah, a couple more losses are going to come. That's inevitable. But I think Penn State at worst is going to be a 5 seed. And if it's a 5 seed that's going to match its best seed in school history, trivia time!
Hey, okay, let's go!
Do you know the year that Penn State got a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament? That's the best seed ever.
That was 1989.
Was it, though?
I don't have any idea.
I got you good. 1996 was the highest seed ever for Penn State, and it lost in that NCAA tournament as a 5 seed to the 12 that year. So you can match. You can match that. You can best it, and that's an exciting thing. It doesn't feel like every single season we have a power conference school that we can say, in the context of that season, that school is having its best season ever. But that could happen here. Arkansas, by the way, was the 12th seed that beat Penn State in the 96 first round when the Nittany Lions were a 5 seed. But that's going to be the worst case scenario. I mean, it would have to take, given how many quad one teams Penn State's going to play, they'd have to lose more games than win the rest of the regular season in order for that to come into play, and that's just simply not going to happen.
First off, they're going to be a top 4 seed. That is my prediction on February 12, 2020. And if you go to KenPom right now and you look at the Big Ten projections, Penn State is projected to be a Big Ten champion, sharing the regular season title with Maryland Terrapins.
Shouts to Miles Dredd.
Shouts to Miles Dredd. Shouts to Lamar Stevens. Shout to Pat Chambers because, listen, Penn State was picked 10th in the preseason Big Ten poll, and this is Pat's ninth season at Penn State. He's never made the NCAA tournament. He won the NIT back in 2018, so they were, by definition, like on the bubble there, went 9-9 in the league, but he's never made the NCAA tournament. So when I had to write about, you know, coaches on the hot seat in the preseason back in October, you know, a power conference coach who has gone 8 straight years without making the tournament and is now entering his ninth season and going to be picked 10th in his league, that guy, regardless of the details, is going to end up on one of these lists. So I was right about Penn State and Pat Chambers, and here's what I wrote. I wrote, quote, "I'm skeptical anybody could do much better than Pat Chambers has done at Penn State, which is one of the toughest jobs in power conference basketball, but how many power conference coaches could miss the NCAA tournament in 9 straight years and return for a 10th? That's what Chambers will be up against if he doesn't march the Nittany Lions into the big dance this season. In a perfect world, he'll get there and make his administration's decision to bring him back an easy one, because my guess is that Penn State's next coach probably won't be as successful as its current coach." And, you know, when I wrote it, obviously it seemed sensible. Otherwise, I would have changed it. Even looking back on it a few months later, it seems like a sensible assessment. Like my bottom line was basically, it's a hard job, and Pat's made it respectable. And I don't know if they could find a coach who could keep it this respectable, but at some point, your administration and your fan base, which puts pressure on your administration, they want you to break through and make the tournament. And so if he doesn't make it in year 9, is he going to really get a year 10? And update on February 12, 2020, all of that is in the rearview mirror now. He's going to make it. He's going to get a contract extension. And this does not mean, because I know somebody will use this example as evidence that, well, if you just give coaches time, this is not proof that what happens when you just give coaches time. If you give a bad coach 10 years, you'll just be bad for 10 years. You know, all coaches don't, quote, deserve time. Coaches don't deserve anything except the money guaranteed on the contract. But when you've got a good coach, and that was my larger point, like, I think Pat's done a good job. I know he hasn't broken through, but I think he's done a good job. When you've got a good coach, then maybe you can benefit from giving him time. Don't give a bad coach good time. You'll just be bad. But if you give a guy you believe in, and I believed in Pat. I believed in Pat as Penn State's coach. If you give that guy time, then maybe, just maybe, you'll be paid off. And Penn State, its fan base, and that administration is getting paid off right now. Penn State, you ready for this? Is one of the best college basketball teams in the country.
You're on fire right now. You're loving this. You're loving the Nittany Lions. To the Final Four?
My Final Four right now is San Diego State, Dayton, Penn State, and Rutgers.
And Rutgers.
That's right. What I want it to be. I want it to be something like that. I love this season. I know that we're losing casual sports fans. I got it.
Whatever. That's.
But
whatever.
I love this season. And it's not just a season in which we've got some unusual teams operating at the top of the sport, like Baylor, San Diego State, Dayton, Penn State. It's the season in which we've got unusual teams operating at the top of the sport, and it's not crazy to think they could go to a Final Four, win a national championship, because like we've talked about before, you're not going to run into Duke with 5 first-round draft picks. You're not going to run into Kentucky with 2 of the top 3 picks in the draft. Like, those type of big brand basketball teams with Zion and RJ and Trey Jones and Cameron, that team doesn't exist this season. There are very good teams, very good blue bloods that are very good teams. Kansas, Kentucky, I think both fall under that umbrella. But I don't – in a different year, you might think a team like Penn State would eventually get overwhelmed. A team like San Diego State would eventually get overwhelmed from a talent perspective. I don't think any of these teams – that are unusual candidates for Final Four's national championship, I don't think they're going to get overwhelmed by somebody else, which by definition, at least I think, makes them legitimate options for anything this season, which is a pretty fun thing to watch.
Yes, and we are getting what I think was inevitable, but we are getting a nice fun race in the Big Ten here, even if Maryland only is the only team. Maryland is the only team out of the Big Ten that has a chance at a one seed, and it's going to be hard-pressed to do that. It's going to have to continue to win and then have teams above it obviously have to lose. But still, right now, Maryland is, after getting a scare against Nebraska, and it wasn't at Nebraska, of course, it was at Maryland, a scare and a two-point win for the Terps on Tuesday night. Jalen Smith with another tremendous game. He is creeping up into potential first-team All-American status. That's another under-discussed plot line I think that has evolved in the past 3 weeks here in college basketball. But point is, Maryland at 10-3, Michigan State at 9-5, and between those two teams is Penn State, which wasn't projected to be there. And then also in the five-loss column, you've got Iowa, Illinois, and Rutgers. We're not going to hit on Illinois on this pod for those that are probably wondering, because that wound up being a big thing. We don't know what the status with Io DeSumo is, so when we know more, I assume on Friday we'll get to that. But that was a great win for Michigan State, a really compelling, intense game, and the way it ended was heartbreaking for Illinois fans, probably gruesome for Illinois fans just to see Io carried off the court. But between all of those teams, Rutgers included, you've got a really nice six-team race developing. And if things break the right way, what will help the Big Ten is you'll have those teams. Maybe Maryland can get to the two line, Penn State on the three or the four, Michigan State on the three or the four, Iowa on the four or the five, Illinois on the four or the five. Who knows? Rutgers on the five or six. And chances of dipping into the second weekend, the Sweet 16. If you told me over under 4.5 Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16, I'd go under, but I'd go under definitely at four. I think that 25% of that second weekend is going to be occupied by the Big Ten Conference because of how many teams are going to be in and how many teams are going to have fairly solid seats.
We played overreaction or reality late Tuesday night on Inside College Basketball. That's where our brilliant producer, Amy Salmonson, comes up with a statement, and we have to say, Amy, that's an overreaction, or we have to say, Amy, That's a reality. I think that's a real thing that's going to happen. One of the statements was this: the Big Ten will have 12 teams in the NCAA tournament. Norlander,
overreaction. Overreaction.
I said overreaction.
Come on. 12 are not getting there. Minnesota's not getting to the tournament. That's not going to happen. Minnesota, 12 and 11 right now. I'd say 11's too many. I think the Big Ten will send 10. I just think the way that it's going to break, that's what we'll end up with. We'll end up with 10, and the 11th team that doesn't get in, there's probably going to be some great case for it, but then we're going to sit on this podcast and say, listen, we know the Big Ten's great, but you can't, if you're with this record, yada, yada, yada. So 11 would tie the all-time mark, but I mark me down for 10 out of the B1G.
I said it would be 10 or 11, so you and I are on the same page there. Let's move on. Another interesting result from Tuesday night, Wake Forest 74, North Carolina 57. It seems to suggest that Cole Anthony is not going to save North Carolina's season. And it's a reminder about just how much of a non-factor the class of 2019 is making on this 2019-2020 college basketball season. We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
So it was a little bit off the radar because it was just unranked team against unranked team, but it's still notable because North Carolina played another game, first game since losing that heartbreaker to Duke over the weekend, and they got smashed by Wake Forest, 74-57. So the Tar Heels are now 0-4 since Cole Anthony's return. He was 5-19 from the field against Wake, missed all six of the three-pointers that he attempted, and now North Carolina is 10-14 overall, 3-10 in the ACC. And we don't need to spend any time on what it means for North Carolina. It doesn't mean anything for North Carolina other than it's just more proof that they're not good, and they're not going to be good, and they're not going to make a run even with Cole Anthony back. The more interesting thing, I think, is that I went through the class of 2019 final rankings for, at 24/7 Sports in terms of just player rankings. I didn't have time to look it up. I can't imagine we've ever seen anything like this where the best high school seniors from last year are having this little of an impact on the sport in general this season. Let me run you through it real quick.
Okay.
Make you throw up. The number one player in the class Anthony.
I'm not gonna vomit.
You're gonna vomit, Deadleg. You're gonna vomit when you hear this. Number one player in the class, Anthony Edwards. He's at Georgia, probably going to the NIT. Number two player in the class, James Wiseman. He quit the Memphis team the week before Christmas. Number three player in the country, Cole Anthony. His team is tied for last in the ACC. Four player in the country, Isaiah Stewart. His team is dead last in the Pac-12. The number five player in the class, R.J. Hampton. He played professionally in New Zealand. The sixth best player in the class, Vernon Carey. He's on a possible number one seed. Shouts to Vernon Carey. Number seven ranked player in the class, Scotty Lewis, probably on an NIT team. Number eight, Nico Mannion, safely in the NCAA tournament, I think. Number nine, Precious Achiuwa, because his teammate quit on him and all his coaches and all the Memphis players the week before Christmas, he's probably going to be on an NIT team.
Probably on an NIT team. Memphis?
I would say probably on an NIT team.
Bury the lead there. All right. All right. I would say maybe. I would not say probably.
You don't – so you're saying
– I'm saying maybe. I'm saying maybe Memphis goes to the NIT. I'm not saying Memphis is probably going to the NIT. I'm not going that far.
You think they might not even make the NIT?
No. I'm saying they – I would say if you're saying – Will Memphis make the NCAA tournament? Maybe or probably not. I will decide on maybe more than probably not. I was surprised that you didn't put Memphis in the maybe column there.
I would say probably not. I mean, they were on the bubble with DJ Jeffries. Now DJ Jeffries is probably out for the season. I don't know how you're going to improve yourself without DJ Jeffries. If you were a bubble team with him, you're probably not going to be as good without him. And the point I tried to make to the Memphis fans that are flipping out over the way this season has unfolded is go give me an example of a team that lost two of its top three players midseason before February 1st and stayed good. Like, they don't exist. You know, I'm not going to go through it here. You can pull the radio podcast if you want. But, like, Kansas last season lost two of its best three players, not before February 1st, but eventually did it with Doak and Legero Vick. And they went when healthy, Kansas was literally undefeated and ranked number one in the country. Then they eventually lost two of their top three players. They went 6-4 in their final 10 games, lost by double digits in the second round of the NCAA tournament. You cannot hold it together when you lose two of your top three players. Hey, by the way, another example of this, Arkansas, rolling. Then Isaiah Joe suffers an injury.
Hey, Joe.
Best NBA prospect, out. Now guess what they've done since he's been out?
They've been losing, man.
Lost three straight games, 0-3 without Isaiah Joe. You can't recover from this stuff, so that's why I would put Memphis on the probably not making the NCAA tournament. They're not in now. They're going to have to play the rest of the season without two of their top three players that they started with. That's just not a recipe for success. 10th best player in the class, Tyrese Maxey, on a good team at Kentucky. That's fine. 11th best player in the class, Khalil Whitney, quit his team midseason at Kentucky. 12th best player in the class, Trey Mann, probably going to the NIT at Florida. 13th best player in the country in that class of 2019, Jaden McDaniels, dead last at Washington in the Pac-12. Yuck.
That is yuck. I'm getting a little bit of an upcheck feeling right now.
Throw up, I told you.
Also, so a couple notes on this. Coincidentally enough, we did the court report and also did Frosh Watch this week and made mention of this, you know, the top 10 freshmen in America. And a lot of the guys you mentioned there have overlap with the top players, obviously, in the previous class. That's sometimes how this goes. But what we're also seeing is that these freshmen don't have the ability to lift their teams up the way that might have been expected. You know, Zeke Najee is number two. Carey's number one. I'll get to them in a second. You mentioned Stewart. Onyeka Okonwu, USC might get there. But his team's been slumping as of late. Trace Jackson Davis, Indiana's been bumpy as of late. We have him at six. Kofi Coburn, Illinois's been good. He's been slumping a little bit. Landers Nolley is the ninth best freshman in the college basketball. Virginia Tech's nowhere near the NCAA tournament. So this has been an issue that's been ongoing. It's a down class, and the guys that are even at the top of it that are performing like top five, top 10 freshmen, you know, more than half of them are on teams either not making the NCAA tournament or they've lost 2-3 games in a row, 4 out of their past 5. Now, Carey is the exception to that. In Wednesday's court report, I've got a couple of items. One, I've got a good little split video with the BYU flying mascot dunk thing. It's a cool little side story. Check that out. I also got something on Northern Iowa, 21-3, and the most under-discussed, really, really good mid-major this season. They're top 35 in KenPom. Spoke with Ben Jacobson. He talked with Toronto Raptors coach Nick Nurse, and that has actually helped their season. You can read both of that stuff, but it leads with Vernon Carey Jr., who to me is interesting in this respect, GP. Duke has definitively the best freshman in America. It's not close. It's Carey 1. I would say it's Najee 2, maybe Isaiah Stewart 2, but it's a close race there. But Carey, to me, is very far out ahead of the pack. And yet, he is not the talk of that team, the talk of that conference, one of the most discussed players in college basketball. He's just not. His numbers actually compare extremely well to everyone that was a Duke big dating back to Jahlil Okafor, with the exception of Zion Williamson, who of course outshines everyone. Now, Trey Jones and Mike Krzyzewski have said this week that in part it's because that he's playing a year after Zion, and maybe that's the case, but I found it actually a bit interesting that Carey, who is on a per 40 minute basis as good or better than everyone except Zion and maybe Bagley, isn't receiving more accolades. He's fourth in the KenPom Player of the Year algorithm. I'm not convinced, though, if we ended the season today, he'd be a first-team All-American. I would put him there. I wouldn't have him as the Player of the Year right now because I think Trey Jones's recent performances have certainly made an impact on that. But from the start of the season to now, to me, Carey has been the best player on Duke's roster, and he is the one guy, as you run down all those players, to me, that's the combination of was really good as a prospect, not the best in his class, but obviously highly thought of, and has continued to be extremely important and productive on a relevant team. I'm just surprised he has not received more buzz to this point. Maybe that changes as we get into March, but to now, I actually think he's underhyped, underdiscussed.
I think the reason is because he's not thought about as a top 10 draft pick, as a lottery pick.
That's also discussed in the court report. Yeah, I get into that too. Yeah, continue.
Obi Toppin is getting a lot of attention, right? And so you go, okay, why? Well, A, he's on a great team. B, he's a projected lottery pick. And C, it's just one dunk after another, after another, after another. He's great for highlights. Like, I did Dayton highlights last night on Inside College Basketball. You know what our Dayton highlights were? An Obi Toppin dunk, an Obi Toppin corner three, and an Obi Toppin dunk. And Dayton wins again.
Well, shouts to Chaelin Crutcher, man. What's the guy got to do?
He's got to dunk or hit a corner three or change his name to Obi.
Obi Crutcher.
He needs to be Obi Crutcher. So imagine, by the way, Jacob Topper. Jake Toppin, like, how mad would you be if your brother got named Obi and then you got named Jacob? I'd be like, Mom, you named...
Well, it's Obadiah, so I think, yeah, they're both biblical names, so that's...
I would rather be Obadiah, wouldn't you?
Yes, I'd rather be Obadiah, yes.
100% rather be Obadiah. You put two names on a table, tell me I can only have one? I'm picking Obadiah every time.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah. And he got dunked on, by the way. Obi dunked on his younger bro. That also happened.
He blocked his shot.
Yeah. Just that's awesome, by the way. I love that. He seems like such a nice kid. Like, Obi's not going to – maybe – I hope he's really giving it to him, like, over text, over the phone, you know, when they see each other next. But I think that stuff is awesome, man. You know, good brotherly rivalry.
Obi and Jacob's mom was in the crowd on Tuesday night because this was Dayton against Rhode Island. And for people who don't know, Obi's younger brother plays at Rhode Island. And he's not Obi Toppin, but he is like a 6'7 freshman averaging 20 minutes per game for a likely NCAA tournament game. Like, that's not nothing. So, but we were in studio and their mother was in the crowd. And she had one of those like half Dayton, half Rhode Island shirts, you know, like split down the middle.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, who do you think she's rooting for? I was like, if I was her, I'd be rooting for the lottery pick.
Yeah.
I'm thinking big picture. I'd be rooting for the lottery pick. So Obi gets up, circles back to Vernon Carey. I think some of it really is he's not considered this amazing NBA prospect. And whether it's right or wrong, and I think you could reasonably argue it's wrong, in college basketball, we tend to focus most on the great players who are also great prospects. Vernon Carey is probably a great player who's a good prospect, and that hurts him a little bit. But if you're looking for freshmen who have actually had an impact on a winning team, he's probably number one on that list.
I agree. All right, you got some cues for us. You got a good listener mailbag. We want to dig up some questions on our usual Wednesday episode.
I don't know if it's good, but I got it.
I'll take whatever we got here.
Okay, good, because you have no choice. Question number one. And we get these questions mostly from Apple Podcast reviews. So you go over there, leave a 5-star review, type whatever you want to type. But if you also want to ask a question, you can ask a question. I'll go through them. And if it interests me on some level, I'll pull it over here to the file that where I keep all my notes. And then, you know, if I get bored with those, I'll look on Twitter. But either way, I got three questions. We do them every midweek podcast. Question number one comes from somebody who identifies as Bracketologist 3. And they ask a very simple question. Why are you not talking about Marcus Howard? Give this man some love. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Cal Boone.
That's incorrect. We have talked about Marcus Howard on the podcast multiple times, including last Friday, I want to say. Now, I know that you spoke on Inside College Basketball on Tuesday night about Marcus Howard, and your stance is right now here on February 12th in advance of Marquette's game against Villanova. You would have Marcus Howard as the National Player of the Year right now. Trivia time.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Marcus Howard, you might know this. You might know this. You might have heard this.
I've done a lot of Marcus Howard research over the past 24 hours.
So I think you might know this one. Marcus Howard is currently third among all Big East players in intra-league scoring. Most points in Big East competition. He needs 22 points against Villanova on Wednesday night to become number one all-time in Big East scoring. What two players does he trail?
He very clearly trails all-time points in the Big East.
Yep. Do you want a hint? I can give you a hint.
Okay.
Both players played at schools that are no longer members of the conference.
Well, that's a damn shame.
It is. I think you can get one. Number two is gettable if I lead you down the right path. Number one, he was a very good player. I just don't know if he would be someone that would immediately spring to mind as the all-time leader in Big East points.
Okay. Here's who I'm going with first.
Okay.
Lawrence Moten.
Wow. Bada bing, number one. Did you pull that? Hold on.
I'll tell you exactly what I did, and you can call it cheating if you want. Here's what I did.
It's ridiculous.
You said school no longer in the Big East. I thought of Syracuse, and then I Googled Syracuse all-time leading scorer, and it was Lawrence Moten.
That's a half cheat. Okay, no more research. What's the other guy? And if you take one or two guesses, then I'll give it up to you.
The other guy is going to be
– and it's not a UConn player, just to be clear.
Ah, that's what I was about to
do. Yeah, I knew you'd be going there, but it's not a UConn player.
The other guy, I'm going to say – it's Mustafa Heron.
Mustafa Heron? He's currently in the Big East and now no longer playing. Done for the season.
I know, but his name popped into my head, so I just wanted to say Mustafa Heron.
It is one Troy Bell at Boston College.
Oh, I know Troy Bell. That's a former Grizzlies draft pick.
Yeah, well, you didn't know that he's number two in Big East scoring, and Marcus Howard's going to pass him on Wednesday night, so there we go. But anyway,
I know he's not number two in Grizzlies all-time scoring.
He's definitely not, by the way. This was a Marcus Howard question, and we've talked about Lawrence Moten and Troy Bell. Shouts to Huss.
We do talk about Marcus Howard. In fact, I did a 3-minute, 30-second video that's on Facebook Watch proclaiming, like Norlander said, Marcus Howard is the National Player of the Year. And one of the things I explained is I didn't seriously consider him for it in the preseason, because what history shows us is you've got to be on a top 25 team to win National Player of the Year. I don't care how good you are. If you're not on a top 25 team, you're not going to win it. I didn't think Marquette would be a top 25 team. They lost two of their top three scorers to transfer, and it happened at a time in the calendar where you can't find comparable replacements. So I thought Marquette would be fine. I thought Marcus Howard would be amazing, but not. I didn't think the team would be good enough for him to win that award. Well, they've won six of their past seven. They're in the top 25 AP poll coaches, both top 25 and one, top 25 at KenPom. Marcus Howard's on a top 25 team, and if he's on a top 25 team, leading the country in scoring, 27.4 points, he should be the National Player of the Year. He's making 39.4% of the 10.3 three-pointers he attempts per game, which is just incredible to shoot that many threes, like hard, difficult threes, and make nearly 40% of them. And he takes, when he's on the court, 42% of Marquette shots, which ranks number one nationally. So, listen, nobody's doing more, at least on the offensive end, for a nationally relevant college basketball team than Marcus Howard. If the season ended today, I would 100% make him my National Player of the Year, which means he's going to go 4 of 27 against Villanova on Wednesday night. I know how this stuff works.
That is a very quality – yeah, no, that's the game that I think I have the most intrigue on a solid Wednesday night. Kansas at West Virginia is right behind it, but five Big East teams are currently ranked in the AP Top 25. It's the first time since the league reformed to 10 teams that we've had five in the AP Top 25. Last time was back in 2013. All five of those Big East teams are playing on Wednesday night, including Creighton at Seton Hall. It's actually a fairly – solid Wednesday night slate, Rutgers at Ohio State, you know, all that good stuff. But Marquette at Villanova, can Howard go off on the road against the Wildcats who need the win? Keep an eye on that. Don't say we don't talk about Marcus Howard, because we do.
And if you want to see that video that I did on set here in New York of Facebook Watch, you can find it on the Twitter feed. Question number two comes from somebody who identifies as Sked24, and he says he's excited about the upcoming 30 for 30 on Pinnacle Bank Arena and wants to know if we can do some politicking behind closed doors to get a North Carolina at Nebraska CBI matchup in the postseason. And if we got it done, who would you pick? He says KenPom currently projects North Carolina as a 1-point favorite inside Pinnacle Bank Arena.
I need to know if you think that line is disrespectful so I can pick the opposite side first.
I do think that's disrespectful to Fred Hoiberg.
Okay, so I got Carolina by 15. Okay.
He's got Nebraska being competitive right now. They just played Maryland to a one-possession game, and that was at Maryland. So you take that game, put it in Pinnacle Bank. What do you think that looks like?
I think Maryland wins by 26.
Are you out of your mind, Freddie Hoiberg, inside Pinnacle Bank? Have you lost your mind?
Have you looked at the record?
I don't look at records.
I think that's all you do. I think you spend 37 to 74 minutes daily looking at records. And right now, this year, we got Nebraska opening up its season back-to-back home losses. Home loss to North Dakota, home loss to Rutgers, home loss to Indiana, home loss to Penn State, home loss to Michigan. Next up, Wisconsin Saturday. Going to be a home loss for Freddie Hoiberg. Nebraska-Carolina at Pinnacle Bank in the CBI is something that I don't even think the CBI would take this season. But I tell you what, I'd love to see it.
I would take Nebraska. I'd take Nebraska in the point. You give me Nebraska inside Pinnacle Bank as an underdog against a team that never wins. I'll take the Huskers. Question number three comes from, I think it was somebody named Brian. Should I look it up just to make sure I get?
No, just let's roll with it. It's Brian.
Yeah, I think. Okay, we're gonna call him Brian.
What if he's Brad? I don't care. What Brady? Who cares? It's Brian. Yeah.
Good. Whatever. He says, "Rage Against the Machine and Run the Jewels are playing Madison Square Garden on 8/10 and 8/11." This is something you pointed out on Twitter, and then Brian, if his name is Brian, he jumps on Twitter and he asks, "Is this the ticket that settles the Final Four and One bet. Is the loser of the Final Four and One going to have to buy Rage and RTJ tickets to Madison Square Garden? What do you think?
I like this, but how about this? So for me, that works. First of all, I'm seeing one of those shows no matter what. Like the on sale is on Thursday, and if Ticketmaster goes Ticketmaster and that's a dreadful experience and I don't get it then, I'm willing to pay like $500 to go see that show. Because I had a chance to see Rage Against the Machine 2 decades ago. Didn't happen. Have to make this happen now. Plus, love Run the Jewels. Podcast Nugget, GP and I have actually seen Run the Jewels together. So I am going to be going to one of those shows no matter what, no matter when, no matter how. But I need to know, if you want this show to be the thing, that's fine. But have you looked at the dates and what's the closest venue that Rage and Run the Jewels play respective to where you live?
St. Louis.
How close is that?
4.5 hours,
oh, gosh,
5 hours.
That's not good.
That's the thing you Northeasterners don't understand. Like, everything's like 90 minutes away from you guys. Like, you could be in the South. Everything's 5 hours away.
That's not good. They're not. All right. Well, how about this? I'm willing. First of all, we have not settled. This is not the bet. The Final Four and One is not the concert bet. The bet was, and I know we have a couple listeners who documented this, and I have it somewhere in my file. The ticket bet was in the preseason. We went over under on win totals, and whoever got closest overall has to buy the other the concert ticket. So that's what the bet is on. And I will say that if I win, yes, the Rage tickets are what you're going to get me. So
I have seen Rage Against the Machine.
Of course you have.
1997 at Liberty Bowl Memorial Stadium, opening up for U2.
Wow. Okay.
And did
you go for U2 or did you go for Rage, or do you even remember why you went?
I went because I was a fan of both. But it was a weird place to see Rage because it's a football stadium. They're on U2's stage, and they just look tiny on the stage. Like, somehow U2 is able to fill up that stage, and they just fill it up. But you take Rage and put them on the exact same stage, and they just look tiny. And then there's Zach De La Rocha, just, you know, it was a Rage show, but in front of 55,000 people who were there to see U2. So it was a weird place to see them, but we enjoyed it. It was a good time.
Rage is good stuff, man. Like, say what you will about Zach De La Rocha and the lyrics from way back when. There's actually a very funny tweet that was sent out some years ago that goes viral, and I don't remember the wording of it exactly, but it's something along the lines of, like, Rage Against the Machine when you're 14, you listen to it for one reason, then Rage Against the Machine when you're 24, you don't think it's great at all, and then Rage Against the Machine in, like, your late 30s, you're like, no, this actually all makes a whole ton of sense. Love me some Rage. Evil Empire is my favorite album of theirs, but really, that's good stuff. I'm super pumped for that and for Run the Jewel. So, yeah, we can rest the preseason over-under bet on that, and if you can't get to that, yeah, you got to find out what show you want that to be, but we'll wait and see on who wins that in about 3 weeks or so. I don't even remember who picked what, but I'll dig it out with about a week to go in the season.
So looking ahead, I'll be back in studio tonight, CBS Sports Network. Got a doubleheader on tap, 6:30 Eastern, Xavier at number 19, Butler, and then 8:30 Eastern, Providence at St. John. So that's a Big East doubleheader on CBS Sports Network, and then I'll get out of studio around 2. And then wake up around 6 and fly home and hate myself.
You'll be calm like a bomb, my man. Calm like a bomb.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M. F. and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Please go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. Do it over at Apple Podcasts. While you're there, leave a review, 5 stars. Leave a nice comment, and we will talk to you again on Friday. That's when we'll get ready for the weekend. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.